podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
And welcome to this very special episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. My name is Craig Telfer, and on this occasion, I am joined by my close associate, Sean McGuigan.
Hello there.
And you know what happens when the Michael Jackson and Geordie Chandler of the Terrace get together. That's right, you are about to get a big pie of lower league football cream shoved right into your face, because Sean and I will be examining one game from the Championship, another from League One, and a final fixture from League Two in great detail, as well as taking a general look at the three divisions. Now, this three-game roundup, this is patented. If you see or hear any other podcast adopting a similar format, please report them to Crime Stoppers, because they are breaking the law. Sean and I have paperwork, and it's intellectual property theft. Now we've got the housekeeping out of the way, let's check in on each other. Sean, how the H are you?
I'm very well. Other than the fact that I would like it to be warmer, I cannot complain whatsoever. I'm in a good place.
I am quite literally in a good place. I'm on my couch, I'm in a sleeping bag. The listeners can't see it, but you can. And I put the radiator on as well, just as a treat. Just a wee treat for myself. I think that's quite a sad day. It shows how bad things are when turning the heating on is seen as a nice treat.
It's a sad indictment of the Conservative government.
Well, listen, I'm going to say though, I actually listened to a podcast with Keir Starmer earlier today. It just comes across as really boring, like a blancmange.
Not that exciting.
Trying to listen to it, like gruel.
A stamp.
Aye, the sort of thing that Charlie Bucket's mother fed him and the rest of the horrible grandparents. I remember actually reading something on Twitter about the... It was an idea about the Charlie Bucket's grandparents. You ever heard of a thing called a rat king before?
I don't think so.
It's a phenomenon where, like, say, a group of rats, if one of them falls into a rat trap and its tail gets covered in adhesive, like it can stick to other rats, and then all these rats are stuck together. Well, it's the idea that Charlie Bucket's grandparents are all stuck together. Their legs are all, they've been in that bed with each other so long that their legs are all entangled. And I can just imagine if Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory had been directed by David Cronenberg, say, when Grandpa Joe tried to get out of the bed, he crawled out of it and the other three just came with him because their legs were all entangled together.
Quite a thought. Or even worse, if Charlie and the Chocolate Factory had been directed by Tom Six, and it would have been maybe something to be like a human centipede. It's interesting though that like his grandfather had lain in that bed for years. Then he got that golden ticket, and suddenly he was up. He was up, whooping and hollering.
I'd be very suspicious as well. Maybe that's something I'm actually pretty surprised you haven't done it already. The Conservative government could bring
in. I'm now starting to sound like a Tory.
That's just something.
It's just an observation. Don't hold it against me. It's just an observation.
For people that are out of work, trick them into giving them tickets to the Cadbury's factory. And if they arrive, then you can say, what's going on here? It's a horrendous idea, but maybe that's what Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is all about, isn't it? Ultimately, the dangers of capitalism and greed.
The original Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the scene where they go through the tunnel is very disturbing. I didn't like it at all when I was young.
There's a chicken gets its head cut off, and there's a centipede crawling over someone's face.
It's like a big millipede, like a bigger one. I think it's more a millipede than a centipede. It's a big, heavy... it has more legs.
Right, of course, a centipede has 100 legs, a millipede has...
A million.
That's a lot of legs. That is. I imagine being kicked to death by a centipede.
You'd have more chance of being kicked to death by a millipede.
It's a frightening thought. Maybe there's some part of a jungle somewhere where there are these like very, very large and very aggressive centipedes. Or millipedes even. Million-legged guys the size of... subway tunnels, just all come around just looking to kick someone in. It's a frightening thought, Sean. Now, before we get going, I know that these podcasts always kick off with us having a wee bit of a laugh and a joke and just catching up with each other and checking in, but I want to apologise to you, Sean, and I want to apologise to the listeners, because I was doing the research for this podcast on Tuesday evening and I was watching Jeepers Creepers 3, and I'm ashamed to say I actually got caught up with the cut and thrust of the movie. So if my analysis and insight is not up to its usual standard, don't lay the blame with me, lay the blame with Jeepers Creepers 3.
Not as bad as Jeepers Creepers Reborn, incidentally.
I haven't seen Jeepers Creepers Reborn.
Yes, it's dreadful.
In what way is it worse than Jeepers Creepers 3?
So you know how, like, Jeepers Creepers 3 is, so yes, a bad film, but there is an idea there that can't be made whole because there is no budget? Jeepers Creepers Reborn is like something that's been made by some students.
Oh, man. Because Jeepers Creepers 3 looked really, really cheap. A lot of special effects and CGI.
Right, so there's lots of CGI in Jeepers Creepers Reborn, but even when they're just outside, so like they're in a field, but the field is CGI. Just go and stand in a field.
How lazy do you have to be as a director to not film in a field? Fields are everywhere. It's like, is it George Lucas directing this? It feels like a sort of prequel to the Star Wars franchise, you know, where it was literally all just filmed in big cavernous studios with blue and green screens, and the special effects would be added in later.
I don't think it was quite at that stature of CGI, put it that way. No, honestly, it's really bad. Whereas, like, even in the third one, the creeper looks okay.
No, it looks like, the worst thing is, it's like a man in a mask. I know that's fundamentally what it is, but it really looks like a man in a mask.
Right, okay, but seeing Jeepers Creepers Reborn, it's just a guy very much in a suit, but the suit doesn't even fit him.
Oh, dear. That's embarrassing. Can you just imagine being the actor turning up on set every day and just seeing this, like, squeezing yourself into this ill-fitting suit and a mask where the makeup has to be put on because it doesn't cover your face properly?
That's bad. It's really bad. It's really
that's
bad.
That's embarrassing. You know something? When I watched the third film, I thought that this villain, the Creeper, really has got quite a lot of sass for effectively a supernatural goblin with a pimped-up truck. I thought he's got a bit too much to say for himself. When he starts doing hand gestures and so on to the various victims of his crimes, you just thought, it's not really working for me here.
Are you familiar with the first two?
I have seen the first one. I actually think the first one's very good for about the first 45 minutes or so. Pretty much up until you realise the creeper's got wings. Or actually, no. When it moves away from the brother and sister, when they start bringing in additional characters, it gets quite crap, because they're really bad, those additional characters. The second film was mince.
I thought the second one was okay. The big issue I had with the third one was the fact that the truck seemed to be sentient, which was never suggested in Jeepers Creepers 1 or 2. I mean, I had lots of issues with Jeepers Creepers 3, but that was my biggest issue.
It's like if Herbie was a horror movie.
but hadn't been a horror movie or even an alive car for all of the Herbie films before that. It was just somebody driving a car.
Do you think one day, Sean, perhaps you and I could sit down and we could write a film? You know, we're quite critical of a lot of the films we watch. I mean, I watched a terrible one last night on Amazon Prime. The setup was quite interesting. It's called Antrim, and the setup's quite interesting. It's the idea of a cursed film. And it starts off like it's like a documentary centred around the film, saying all these terrible things happened to the film. Now we're going to show you it in its full. And when I watched it in film, I was just really, really annoyed by it. And I know it's a 90-minute movie that's lodged right in the back of Amazon Prime somewhere, but even so, I was frustrated, annoyed by this movie. Do you think, though, that we could perhaps write a movie? If we were to put our heads together, do you think you and I could write a film together?
Well, we could, but whether or not it would be any good or not, I have my doubts.
What do you want to write it about?
What would it...
How about a sort of a Claude Anelka's time in charge of Wraith Rovers, a dramatisation of that?
Or we could make a remake of Wraith Rovers, which was the scam which Wraith Rovers were perpetuated in where somebody made a film about a zombie apocalypse that involved Wraith Rovers and their players, which never saw the light of day.
I've literally never heard of this. What is this?
So Greg Spence was in it.
Really?
I can't remember what happened. So it looked like it was some kind of tax scam. But basically, if you Google it, there's a few things online about the fact that it was made, but then just... So I believe there was a premiere. Mm-hmm. But I remember... I can't remember what the editor of the Fife Press, what his name is. Alan somebody or other. Regardless. I remember him going to the premiere and then just writing a really scathing piece on it. Like, literally one of the worst things he's ever seen. But then it never saw the light of day. But I believe the director was at it.
Have you ever seen Sex Lies of the Potato Men?
I've seen bits of it.
How can you only see bits of it? Surely you go watch Sex Lies of the Potato Men, you take in the whole thing. You don't just pick and choose what parts of Sex Lies of the Potato Men you digest.
Well, you know, like if you've got Sky Movies and mm-hmm. you'll be flicking through and Sex Lies of the Potato Men might be on, so I might stop in it for a few seconds, realise that that's more than enough for me, and then go to another film. Whereas you will not only... I would imagine you've probably seen it five times.
Six. I've seen Sex Lies of the Potato Men six times. The reason that I bring up Sex Lies of the Potato Men is because that was... I think that was seen as a tax write-off, where this film was so bad, but you take up... I don't know how the way these things work. You're given certain tax breaks to make this movie, and effectively you rush out this piece of shit, and then you can make your money back on it that way. So that's what I think Sex Lies of the Potato Men was. And it sounds like this Wraith Rovers movie was similar.
There was a campaign or an opportunity, shall we say, by the director that if you paid money, you could be an extra in it.
Okay.
So I think the director was at it, put it that way.
And Greg Spence was in it. Was it a film about zombies?
Yes.
It's quite interesting. Greg Spence coming back from the dead to sign for Stirling Albion the other week. It's just a wee joke there. Now, speaking of jokes, that's the final joke that you'll hear in this podcast. There'll be no more laughter to be had, because this is where we start actually talking about football, genuinely start talking about the football. Now, and we're going to be discussing sides that we haven't necessarily talked a lot about so far this season. I think that when you come onto this podcast, you know you're going to get Wraith Rovers, you know you're going to get Stenhouse Muir. We've spoken a lot about Queen's Park and Falkirk and so on, but we're not going to be discussing those teams. We are going to be trying something new. So a combination of newness and Jeepers Creepers 3, if anything we say is incorrect, that's your reason why. Now, we'll start off, Sean, by going to the Championship, where Hamilton Academicals recorded their first league win since mid-October with a narrow victory over Greenock Morton at New Douglas Park. By all accounts, this was a dreadful, dreadful game of football, low in incident, low in quality, and Andy Winter's first-half penalty was enough to win the match. The Ackies are still rooted to the foot of the table, but they have nudged a little bit closer to Arbroath. And Morton find themselves in a bit of a slump at the moment. They've only taken 2 points from the last four matches, and that's them falling out of the promotion playoff places. Sean, talk me through this one.
I know we say this a few times, because it's sometimes quite hard to remember what ideas make and don't make it onto the TV show, and then what does make it, what we film, but then doesn't quite make the final cut. Mm. But am I right in saying that somebody said that Morton would be a good bit, by the time we came back as a TV show in February, Morton would be clear at the top of the Championship?
Someone might have said that, yes.
Was it you? No, it definitely wasn't me. I thought it was a terrible take, and I'm not surprised that they are starting to perhaps regress slightly.
That's interesting, Sean, because I thought that the last time we spoke about Morton, in fact, I think it might have been myself, you and Fowler that were on, we did Morton Wraith Rovers, so we suppose we have talking about Morton, so might as well start with them. And I think it was the idea that there's only a handful of players in that team, there's about 13, 14 players in that team that Dougie Emery really trusted. So that's why you're seeing the same 11, the same players coming off the bench, the same players staying on the bench. And once he was able to bring in his own players, Morton would be in a better position to challenge, and he's done that.
I actually think opposite has happened. as in he's started to make signings, and I would imagine, don't get me wrong, like, so maybe they won't make any more signings between now and the end of the window. However, they have that game against Celtic that's coming up this weekend, which has presumably allowed them to bring in a couple of bodies. They've brought in Calvin Miller, who has been okay at this level previously. I am surprised that they've brought in Ali Roy. I am very surprised that Ali Roy was able to get another stint in the Championship. So you now look at the bodies that they've brought in, and it's given them options. But I'm not entirely sure those options are making that starting 11 like better. So Emery has, if there's been any criticism from Morton fans when it comes to Doug Emery, and there hasn't been too much, it's that the substitutions have been pretty much the same every week. And now there are a couple of more options. But whether that's necessarily making that 11 better, I'm not entirely sure. And certainly based on the example of this defeat to Hamilton, very much not the case. Yes, they put Hamilton under pressure more so towards the end of the second half. And maybe if you were that way inclined, you could argue that Morton maybe deserved a point. However, I thought they looked poor. And I still think unless they can strengthen, and I don't just mean add to the squad, I mean literally bring in players who will improve that starting 11, I still think they might be the team to miss out on that top four.
I think it was quite a difficult game. The highlights, I think you made the, I don't want to steal your joke, Sean, but when we were in contact with one another beforehand, you said this game looked like it had been filmed in a kaleidoscope. because it was absolutely, the conditions at New Douglas Park were absolutely horrendous. It was very, very rainy, very, very windy. And when I was watching it, I just imagined like Grant Gillespie's wig blown off. I don't know why, I was just thinking about the linesman running the line.
You think that's why he got sent off? Do you think he started that game in a sense of high anxiety? And that's why he couldn't control himself. He was desperate to get out of the rain, the wind. He knew that the glue that was holding his syrup of fig on only had a shelf life of about 8 hours. He needed to get out of there pronto. And that was why he put in that dreadful tackle to get his second yellow. He needed to get out of Dodge to protect his dignity.
Have you ever seen the video of the guy being interviewed on a windy day and he gets hit in the face with a Greggs bag? That's just what I imagine someone getting hit in the face with Grant Gillespie's wig would look like. But Grant Gillespie, we might as well jump forward to his red card. I mean, it was a definite red card. I think it was actually, could have been a straight red for that tackle in the first instance.
I thought so. There was no doubts about it. I tell you what, I did have doubts about Hamilton's penalty. I don't know what it was for.
I've watched it back loads of times. I'd seen it shared on Twitter, and somebody was complaining. I think it might have been Evan McFarlane, who is certainly well known on Twitter. He's not shy in telling you about himself online. And he tweeted out complaining about the standard of refereeing, because obviously with VAR being introduced in the Scottish top flight, the second tier of referees, they man the VAR stations. So there's like a whole new batch of referees that have come up to take their place that are working the Championship, League One and League Two. And watching it back, it's a guy called Tom Sparrow. Sounds like a sort of gay porn star. Tom Sparrow swings in a really slim gay porn star. I put the word twink in my notes. He swings in a cross as a free kick, swings it in. Effie Ambrose tries to clear it. The ball bounces to the edge of the area. And then Dan O'Reilly goes for it at the same time as Grant Gillespie. And it appears to be just flying out for a corner. It just feels like a 50-50 that just should be like an Aki's corner. But the referee, Duncan Williams, gives a penalty.
I don't think it looks like a foul at all, and nobody, I don't think any Hamilton player appeals for it. And even when the referee kind of gesticulates as to what's happening, there feels like an air of confusion, because nobody can quite get their head around why it is a penalty to Hamilton.
Aye, and I was like watching that bit back just over and over again to try and put myself in the referee's perspective and why they're given that, and I really am at a loss. And after this point, like, Winter sticks a penalty away, and I think that Aki certainly had better chances to win this game. They had a really good chance later on in the match where Winter again, Brian Schwocke in the Morton goal made a really good save, diving to his left to slap the ball away. And there was a bit there towards the end again where I think it might have been Winter. It was quite hard to tell with the highlights because, as you say, it was like watching a kaleidoscope. He gets put through and goal. His final touch is a little bit heavy and Schwocke's able to come out to block the ball, might get caught under his feet. But I think Hamilton might have deserved this one.
Maybe just about. See if it had been a draw, you could argue that was probably a deserved result, a point apiece. But Hamilton were okay. However, I do think that they won't bring anybody in January. So they're the worst team I've seen this season by a long chalk. They have a squad that is kind of youthful, have no experience whatsoever. I was up there a couple of weeks ago for the Raith Rovers game. As bad as I've seen, it was Armand Doney's laddie was up front for them. And don't get me wrong, he's 17, could have a career, but the fact that he's leading the line for them in a reasonably important game, because if Hamilton had won that day, it kind of would have, sucked the Rovers in a wee bit at the bottom of the league. But they never look like scoring, never look like scoring in open play, and that's a massive problem. If it hadn't been for that penalty, which was never a penalty, I don't think they would have scored on Saturday either. So a great 3 points. You still look about who's around them. Arbroath, I think, have done some really good business in January. Time. Cove look streets above Hamilton. So yes, as much as this is a good result, I'd still be surprised if they're able to build on it and able to kind of extricate themselves from the problem that they're in.
You're absolutely right. I suppose Arbroath there's a lot of money in the bank at Arbroath. I think they have we've spoken about this new recruitment team they're putting in place that appears to be paying dividends, because they've shipped out some of the duds like Derry Corfe, if that's how you pronounce it. He's gone already. You guys have come in and they do look better. It was a good draw at the weekend, drawn 2-2 with Ayr United. That's a really good point in the circumstances. Cove Rangers, who are 8 points ahead of Hamilton, they've changed their manager. They brought in Paul Hartley, hasn't had the immediate effect, but there's already, they have signed Scott Fox is coming from Queen of the South. Tony Weston's coming on loan from Rangers. That happened earlier today. And there's positions that they can immediately go out and strengthen in. We've been quite critical. Stuart McKenzie a couple of times in this podcast, the Cove goalkeeper. Scott Fox is an upgrade in that. They need credible alternatives in attack there to Mitch Meganson. Tony Weston should provide that. So you can see them getting better. And I think you're right in what you say about Hamilton. There just isn't the capacity to get any better, and it's make do and mend. And I suppose, how many other clubs would a manager enjoy such a long losing run before changes are being made? And you think that Rankin, perhaps under any other club, would have been moved out a while ago?
You sometimes wonder if, and I'm sure they do, I'm sure they absolutely do, but you sometimes wonder how much the Hamilton board care. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's quite interesting what you're saying there, Sean. I got a DM on Twitter last week from a Hamilton fan who listened to the podcast, and he was pointing out, I think, when you and I were complaining about the lack of match highlights from some teams, and one of the teams that we mentioned was Hamilton Accies, and the guy said just what a shambles the club are at the moment. And there's a number of things that you see it get shared on social media. We've no doubt seen them, that the screenshots from Facebook posts that have been clipped and put up on Twitter, and they're funny. But I suppose they're funny, but it's a sense of relief that it's happened to someone else and not you. You'll know, Sean. You'll know. You have been a prime. I hate using the word banter club, but Raith Rovers have been a banter club at points, like Claude and Elka. the Gary Locke, John Hughes season of getting relegated there. I mean, there's two times in a lifetime. Some clubs never even see that. Some clubs are never banter clubs, but Raith Rovers have done it twice, and I think that Hamilton Accies this season are perhaps Scotland's premier banter club. But I mean, there was situations, the supporter who messaged me, and quite a long, very detailed DM on Twitter, they offered a fan's tickets to a Lowland League match between Rangers B and Celtic B.
Yep. No, I've seen that. I've seen that at the very, very last minute. But it was when there was a kind of negative reaction to it. They then replied and said, well, didn't realise there'd be this kind of reaction. like as if it was like a kind of Facebook maw.
Sticking with the Facebook page, there was obviously the Facebook administrator was calling out supporters, but he'd done it from the official Hamilton Accies under their Facebook account. He hadn't switched, but he hadn't switched from his back to his personal account, so it just looked incredibly amateurish. And on top of that, fans are being banned from New Douglas Park. We're seeing people on social media, people on Pye and Bovril are complaining about having been banned. And just, I think being a Scottish football fan outside the Rangers and Celtic, you can handle your club being bad at times, because that's just what happens. There's only two real successful clubs in Scotland. Being bad is part and parcel of being a football supporter. But it's when your team's a laughingstock, that's when it's not fun. Nobody wants to be a laughingstock, and that's what Hamilton are at the moment.
I mean, like Colin McGowan has been involved at Raith Rovers in the past, and I remember when he faced criticism from Raith Rovers fans, he suggested that if he wasn't able to get somebody to kind of take the club off his hands, then he would bulldoze the stadium and just build houses on it. His tenure at Stats Park was dreadful. Mm-hmm. And you're starting to see that amateurishness now being quite prevalent at Hamilton. And you're right, it kind of feels like Hamilton are, like, let's say Hamilton get relegated this season, and I generally think that'll be the case. They don't have a big fan base that you would necessarily think, right, they'll immediately be one of the favourites for League One. Like, you wouldn't think that at all. Mm-hmm. Like, you would maybe almost lumber them in with the same as Alloa, for example, as it might be a half-decent League One club, mm-hmm. but certainly not a very good one. And you're right, if they can't make significant changes between now and the end of January, then the kind of direction that they're going in is extremely concerning.
Yeah, that's what the fan finished his DMs saying. He said, like, he's been following the club for a couple of decades now, and he's seen stuff like players going on strike, points deductions, being down in third division, but he's always stuck by the club because he believes in them. But this is the first time where it's just complete indifference, complete apathy to what is going on. And when you think about, like, remember when you and I were working on Tell Me's Pelly, one of the great moments of us working on that website was the Accies against Hibernian in the playoffs, where they were relegated Terry mm-hmm. Butcher's side. I mean, Accies, like, over the last, like, 5 or 6 years have had some, like, 5, 6, 7, 8 years I've had some great days, like winning those playoffs, like going to Ibrox and beating Rangers on occasion. And it's just that they just seem an absolute shadow of themselves, and it just feels like it's a real slow decline, and I don't know the answer for it. Like, it just feels like the board are effectively split in two, looking after the stadium and looking after the football team. I think they're two separate entities, and I just think that's a recipe for badness when those things happen.
I don't even think... I think that there's more needing done than... So let's say they got rid of Rankin, for example, and whether that's required or not, I'm not sure, because I think he has a squad of essentially...
kids.
Teenagers. Ah, exactly. Teenagers and some guys who may be okay. If they were to get rid of him, would that make any difference? I'm not so sure. I think it needs to be change in the boardroom before Hamilton get any better.
You know what? I feel like that bit in The Office where David Brent says to Gareth, go and get the guitar. So John Rankin says to Mikey Doyle, go and get that Wheel of Punishment. And he just wheels it out for the Wheel of Punishment. There's Mikey the Banter Boy.
Which he has in his boot. He's had it in his boot since he left Falkirk.
He's just waiting for the right moment to bring it out. And this is it. This is it. Get morale up. We've just got our first win in 3 months. Let's get the Wheel of Punishment. We were watching that video on Falkirk's Facebook page and expecting it to be some sort of punchline, but it never really came. It was just a bunch of boys going, ooh, oh, like that. As this wheel was spun.
I watched it for a long time and I was like, does this ever improve?
I think that was the season where Falkirk relegated that season.
They certainly didn't do very well.
Maybe that's it. Mikey Doyle should just leave the Wheel of Punishment in the back of his car then. That's imagine like the Wheel of Punishment is like Jumanji. Like at the very end of Jumanji where it washes up in a beach and a bunch of kids pick up, you think, well, the same thing's going to happen again. Maybe that's it, like with the Wheel of Punishment.
Judging by what I saw in that video, I don't think the Wheel of Judgment would be able to take it, like getting washed up anywhere. It would be absolutely smashed up into smithereens.
Just imagine Tom Hanks clinging onto it for dear life in Castaway as he just bobbles towards some remote island.
Kate Winslet hanging on for dear life.
Oh, it's the only thing salvaged for Titanic. The Wheel of Judgment. That's quite funny, the idea this Wheel of Judgment has been in the go for centuries. It's like Forrest Gump, it just turns up and like it was in the back of John F. Kennedy's car in Texas.
Anyway,
the next game's coming up, Sean. For each side now, the Accies have done well in their cup competitions so far this season. They've only lost one match in the cup competitions all season. That was to Dundee in the League Cup group stages. They've got Ross County at home next. Imagine that's even though Ross County are misfiring at the moment, the top flight. Straightforward win for them.
I know you're saying they've only lost one game, but like that, is that not because they've been eliminated from most of their cups early?
Well, they knocked out the Premier, so they've done well in the Scottish Cup, and they beat Clyde in the SPFL Trust Trophy.
I'm going to go for a Ross County win.
After that, they've got Partick Thistle away. I'm going to imagine the same sort of thing.
I'm going to go for a Partick Thistle win.
Well, we've kind of not really spoken much about Greenock Morton, but... There's Tottenham Hotspur just scored against Manchester City. Sorry, I don't like breaking fourth wall here, but that just caught my eye there. I was looking past my notes. But Celtic's game against Greenock Morton, how much money? Would you any ideas of how much money Morton are likely to make from that?
I would say somewhere between £150,000 to £200,000.
That's pretty good money.
I believe that's what Raith Rovers made last season from one of their visits.
Okay, but so adjust that for inflation, that's about £350,000 now.
Yeah, exactly that.
That's very good. That's very good. And you're right, it's a good time to get on this a big team like that, because that money can be reinvested in the squad or to pay off debts or whatever. No, Morton, am I right in thinking Morton are debt-free?
Yes, I think, because they're now... fan owned and that golden casket thing is in the past, and yeah, I think so. They've written off all their debt.
Oh, that's very good. Then that can just be invested in players. I wonder who they could get. So I think like an English Premier League, an aging English Premier League striker. I can't think of one off the top of my head. If I could, I'm sure it'd be hilarious.
Andy Carroll.
Oh, now we're talking. Could you imagine him pulling on the blue and white hoops of Morton? It's not that enticing, is it? Can you imagine Andy Carroll playing for Morton? Yes, I can.
Well, yes, I can. I doubt it would be enticing for Andy Carroll.
Andy Carroll picks.
In fact, he's not at Reading. He's already in a blue and white strip.
Oh, right.
I think.
He has one too many one night and ends up in Morton. And he just goes in the changing room, pulls in a blue and white top, doesn't think anything of it. They've got Arbroath in their next match. Is this a good opportunity to get back on track?
I think Arbroath will beat them.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think Doug Emery has done wonders at Morton this season. He has got he's got a tune out of players that I didn't expect him to get a tune out of. I think they may be reverting to the mean a wee bit. I still think they'll be absolutely fine.
Yeah.
I anticipate them to finish mid table. I don't think we're in the top four. I think Arbroath might beat them this next time around.
Just very quickly, sticking on Arbroath, remember last season how a lot of people wanted them to win promotion, win the championship, get into the Premiership? It's very interesting to see how your goodwill towards a team can dissipate off the back of something very small. And see that GZ Peeps, that is without a doubt some of the worst patter I've heard this season. And I think that anyone caught using it, online or otherwise, should be bundled into the back of a van, wrapped in a rug. And then let go after a couple of days. Obviously, you shouldn't be murdered for having bad patter. Christ, if that was the case, I'd have been dead a long time ago. No, I'm just kidding. But you know what I mean.
I mean, it was bad, but the Courier has really leaned into it. There's been several articles about GZ Peeps.
Listen, it's in these days of competitive journalism, we know people that are journalists. You've got to try your best. And if that means writing about GZ Peeps, then so be it.
The guy who said it was killing mice earlier that day.
That's right, yeah, he's a pest controller.
Yeah. Well,
he says he does.
What I took from it, he enjoys killing mice.
I found a mouse in my house. I'm sorry, I don't know that rhymes here. Just prior to Christmas, I saw a mouse in my came into my bedroom. It was a day after my work's night out. I had one too many, and I had a bit of a hangover. This was into the evening, but see, when I saw that mouse come into my bedroom, my goodness! See the shot of adrenaline I got. My goodness, it was like the scene from The Rock when they get exposed to the chemicals and they've got to inject themselves with adrenaline. That's what I felt like when I saw this mouse. And I've seen it one more time since. I bought mouse traps, but it hasn't come back and it hasn't been killed in any of the traps. I just imagine it just doesn't fancy it anymore.
You should hire the guy that said GZ Peeps.
hire him on the pretense that I've got a mouse problem and then just tie him up. It's on a Saturday. Arbroath are playing that day. He thinks he's going to be doing the commentary, but no, he's like Terry Waite chained to my radiator.
You're starting to sound like George Michael.
there was a sexual element involved in that, wasn't there?
I am very surprised that he was allowed to go in mainstream television after just. Essentially hiring, I believe, some kind of sex worker, mm-hmm. and then just forcing him against his will to stay in his house for about 5 days. but there you go. He's still a highfalutin TV star.
Well, there you go then. Maybe if you wrote a song as good as, I was going to say Too Shy, that was Kajagoogie. Do You Really Want to Hurt Me? If you wrote a song as good as that, then maybe you could handcuff anyone you wanted to your radiators.
I'll bear that in mind.
Excellent. So there you go. I can see Sean going straight to pick up a guitar straight after this.
And some handcuffs.
Sticking with the championship, Sean, one of the stories, I've done this for every division, by the way, little stories that caught my eye over the course of the week, and this is one about Dundee's pitch. They were supposed to play Dunfermline Athletic on Tuesday night. This was their SPFL Trust Trophy Cup quarter-final match. It should have been played last week, but the pitch was waterlogged. This time around, the pitch was frozen, and Dundee knew the temperature was going to fall. They told the SPFL they wouldn't put on the undersoil heating because, and I quote, it was fiscally irresponsible to do so.
Mm-hmm. I sometimes think that Dundee's issue is their groundsman. and the only reason I say that is because I don't follow him on Twitter, but any time I see his tweets, there is an irregular amount of gaps between a lot of words. So sometimes there's double spaces between words. Sometimes there's triple spaces. And a lot of things are spelt incorrectly. And based on that, I struggle to believe that he's the best man to look after Dundee's park.
surely, though, just a poor grip on social media, that doesn't preclude you from being a good groundsman.
No, but he puts up videos of what he's doing, and I think to myself, I'm not entirely sure that's the best thing to do.
Well, have you ever had to be the groundsman at a large piece of grass?
Well, no, but see when he's trying to defrost a park by blowing a leaf blower over it, and it doesn't make me think that he's some kind of park expert.
He's thinking outside the box, and I think that's the
Do you know something? He's doing his best, I suppose. But do you know something? Dundee are starting to stack up games, and if that goes against them, good.
I think that's what you just touched on that last week when we spoke about Queen's Park and their ability to win the championship. That might depend on Dundee's backlog of fixtures. But there's an interesting thing that telling the SPFL we're not going to put the undersoil heating on because we don't think it's worth it.
And then in fairness, you don't have to. There's no rule to say you have to put on the undersoil heating.
Is that so?
I believe so, yes.
Again, I did not know that. I saw George Cran, whose work, when I have read it, I've quite enjoyed reading it. He had written an article about it for The Courier. He's a Dundee supporter, Dundee's his beat. But once again, I couldn't access The Courier because I had used my free subscription reading Jim Spence's columns. This was going to be quite an interesting thing to talk about Jim Spence. If you go and judge him by the stuff that he posts on his Twitter, he's in a bad place. The bad place he's in is a lack of attention.
He's certainly in an interesting place.
It's obviously we're not going to. This isn't the time nor the place to debate like the Section 35 or whatever. But I just see the stuff, and I just see a man who is still angry from being kicked out of the BBC, or not being leaving the BBC even in 2013 after the whole Rangers debacle when he tried to sass off Rangers and somebody accosted him in a park, and he's still bitter about that. Like, I think free speech is something that he's a big advocate for, and it's just there's something a bit pathetic about him these days. I mean, he's always been pathetic, but
he comes across as a man who is attempting to be clever and smarmy.
Yes, aye.
Which is difficult when you have gigantic ginger hair.
You know, I never, until I looked at pictures of Jim Spence, I didn't think it was possible to smell what someone looked like by looking at a photograph. He smells like, I imagine, he smells of musk, he smells of old man sweat, he smells of clothes that have been left in the washing machine too long before being brought out to dry. And I imagine he smells of arse. I imagine he smells like, have you ever been for a drive, Sean, and you've sat in a passenger seat for about 4 or 5 hours, and if you were to smell the passenger seat like after you got out, that's what Jim Spence would smell like, a combination of those three things.
Just wait a minute, just for my understanding here, you have been on a journey, a long journey, and then somebody, like a passenger, has got out of the car, and then you've smelt the seat after they've left the car.
And said, I imagine this is what Jim Spence smells like.
Right, well, that's fine.
He's been updating his bio again recently, and it's just obviously, when I was screenshotting his bios for, what was it, like 4 or 5 years, it had to come to an end at some point. But I'd like to have it come to its end on my terms.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to.
Yeah, but he blocked you.
He blocked me on Twitter, yes. Despite the fact that exchanges had been fairly cordial, that's him, it's his Twitter, his rules.
His loss.
His loss. His current bio is likes a laugh.
Do you know who he doesn't like?
Who?
Craig Anderson.
And that, dear listener, is a story for another day. We will move. We will move into League One. And we're going to be talking about a mid-table stalemate between Kelty Hearts and in jokes, aren't they? They're great. The listener will be like, yeah. Oh, what's this going on? What's this going on? But no, no. Trust us, if you knew the story, you'd find it very funny. But we're looking at mid-table stalemate between Kelty Hearts and Airdrieonians. The Diamonds took the lead through Adam Frizzell's first half goal, but that was cancelled out by Jamie Bar-Jonas, who drew his side level in the 66th minute. Kelty are still in 7th place. Airdrie are just 2 points off Alloa in 4th place with 33 points. What did you make of this one, Sean McGuigan?
I tell you what, the interesting thing about this was, I thought we were looking at Alloa versus Edinburgh.
You didn't watch Alloa versus Edinburgh, did you?
Yes, I did. But right. To be fair, I've also watched the Airdrie game as well.
So are all your notes for Alloa versus Edinburgh?
Yes. But I have watched the Kelty versus Airdrie game.
Okay, well, I tell you, seasons we both watched that. We'll both talk about it and then we can go and discuss the Alloa Edinburgh game. I haven't seen that at all. I didn't get around to watching the highlights for that. But for this game, the first thing that I noticed was how nice New Central Park looks at the moment. I was there last year, and behind the goals, it was effectively like a grassy embankment, a sort of muddy slag heap, very like a sort of small scale Fir Hill, for want of a better expression. I remember thinking that when it comes to like a rainy day or something, that's going to become quite muddy, and that's not going to be a nice place to watch football. However, that's been done up with sort of like wooden terracing. It looks class. It looks a really, really good place to go and watch football. And I was thinking that I really want to go and see a Kelty game at some point soon.
Aye, so last season, during the unpleasantness of Raith Rovers, I went to a Kelty game. And I thought the setup was just really good. The stadium was good. Their social club was good. Like everything about them was very, very positive. And even though they probably have underperformed this season in terms of not necessarily they've probably underperformed based on how other people thought about them rather than what their squad dictates, I think.
I don't know, Sean. It's like looking at League One this season. If you're going right back to the start of the season, looking at League One, you would kind of think of the teams who would expect to win it. So it was for myself, Dunfermline and Falkirk are the two teams that are going to win it. Queen of the South will get third place. And then for that fourth spot, you could have said Montrose, Airdrie, Alloa, Kelty. So there's just so many teams like decent teams vying for the same sort of positions. I think Kelty are perhaps performing how I expected them to perform because they haven't really made any like big blue chip signings.
Aye, and that's just it. That summer there was probably the first summer they've not like really invested quite heavily in the squad, and their kind of big names are. Other than Jamie Bar-Jonas, I suppose, or maybe Nathan Austin, that the bigger names are guys that are maybe coming to the end of their career.
Yeah.
So they're probably now probably performing at just how you would roughly expect them. But I suppose the thing about them, it kind of feels like. It kind of feels like the person in charge is not quite as interested anymore. Like I don't know if that's the case, but he's like there hasn't been any investment this season from what I can tell. And like what you're saying in terms of whether they are whether they're performing at their relevant level, the fact that Dougie Hill is still playing for them, somebody who has actually retired and come out of retirement and is still playing a role for them. I don't know. There's something about Kelty that is not quite. They're not what I expected this season.
I see what you mean. I suppose that like a lot of the big investment was to put a team together that would get out of the Lowland League at the first go, and that's what they had. I mean, they were signing guys. The team that won the Lowland League, I think that was a team that would easily have held its own in League Two, which turned out to be the case. They crashed through League Two. And there was a big step up. We said that there perhaps need to be investment in the defence. That hasn't necessarily happened. I think Tam O'Ware, that was the only real name that came in. Liam Font, not Liam Fontaine, Jordan Forster is somebody else that came in. So yeah, it's sort of guys that are coming to the towards the tail end of their careers. However, it's like you can't keep spending, like, I think that if you were to keep spending money at Celtic Arts, you're just like just chucking money at something. I think it's a difficult league to get out of. I think that for me, for Celtic, I suppose it's just like establishing yourself as a League One side, just consolidating your position within the division, maybe having a crack at the top four, and then taking it from there. I think Celtic are on track to do that.
They are, and I suppose my concern would be if their current owner is not interested in continuing to invest, then how viable are Kelty? Like they feel even less viable than Ross County, for example, who are kind of propped up by McGregor's money. I'm not sure about Kelty at all. This is the first time that I know we've kind of spoken about Kelty in terms of they've come for the lower League Two, now League One. I actually think this is the first moment where I am. I think they will go backwards from here.
I disagree. I think they're going to establish themselves as a decent mid to lower end League One club. You can maybe challenge it at some points, but that's why I don't know what the owner's intentions are. I think it's not really in a position to speculate. I don't think that it's quite been. Compare him to like Willie Haughey, for instance, at Queen's Park. We kind of know what his intentions are for the club. We don't know what that story is at Celtic Arts. I don't think it's fair to speculate in that regard.
I suppose they've went from a team who we thought may challenge at the top of League One to just not being in that equation whatsoever. And to be fair, to be a kind of village team and be in League One and not be in the relegation equation, fine. That's like a decent season, I suppose. And fair play to them. But they can't aim any higher this season, I suspect.
Listen, it's a difficult league. I don't think that fourth place is out of the question. No, honestly,
really?
For the teams from eighth place. So the teams that we mentioned there. So from between Alloa in fourth place and Celtic Hearts in Queen of the South in eighth place, I think any of those sides could get into the top four.
Nah, I'm not having that at all.
Okay, well, do you want to? Shall we discuss the match then, at least?
We probably should.
One of my favourite moments in this entire match was right at the very start. Josh Ray passes the ball straight to Callum Higginbotham. Callum Higginbotham takes a touch, has time to control and shoot, hits it right over the bar, and somebody in the crowd shouts, "Fuck's sake, Higgy," really, really loud. That was my favourite moment from this whole match.
Mine's as well. It was far and away the best moment of a game that was okay, but not spectacular.
I think that's fair to say. The standout for me in this match was not just because he scored, but Jamie Bar-Jonas was central. Any time Celtic Hearts had a good chance, it was Jamie Bar-Jonas that was creating it. Jamie Bar-Jonas is the one finishing off. And I think he has been linked with Dundee. I saw that certainly in Pine, but it might be street talk, but he was linked with Dundee. And it's any time I've seen him, and that was last season, playing for Celtic in League Two, and the times, I mean, albeit via highlights and so on this season, it's just a very, very classy player who is playing at a level not suited to his ability.
I think he's good. I suppose I am biased because of his very short tenure at Stars Park, where he was not very good. But to be fair, there was lots of players that weren't very good during that spell. I think he could potentially shine at Championship level. Whether Dundee is a club of him, I'm not entirely sure. But he certainly deserves to go someplace higher up in the pyramid than Kelty.
Yeah, and based on this performance, the number of like good chances that he was involved in. Took his goal very well. You know, it was a really good finish. Although it was quite funny, Nathan Austin trying to to claim it's his, the ball's going over the line, and there's Nathan Austin trying to jump and diving header it into the net to steal the goal from him. But of course, it was Airdrie that took the lead, and it was obviously it was from a Kelty mistake there. I think it's Callum Gallagher tries to hook the ball over to Frizzell, but mishits it. But then Rhys Peggy, the Kelty fullback, completely slices his clearance and slices it very, very perfectly into the path of Frizzell, and it's a good finish beyond Jamieson and the Kelty goal. Interesting fact, Adam Frizzell is going out with Jackie McNamara's daughter. There's a wee bit of celebrity gossip for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
So, well, now you do.
Now I do.
Now you do. I suppose it's kind of just going by the highlights. It's just, I thought that Kelty will perhaps be a bit disappointed that they didn't actually make more of that based on the chances that they had. I think Airdrie had a really good chance in the first half there, where it was Charlie Telfer. There's a really, really nice flurry of passes between Callum Smith. Charlie Telfer's put through in goal, and he tries to slip in Callum Gallagher, but it feels like he's in a better position to go and try and shoot himself. Peggy blocks it when he should have gone himself, and I suppose we don't really have much to say about this game. It's always good if we've both got notes to go along with the game. So I suppose we could wrap up there. Sean, have we learned anything from either of these teams with this? Have we learned anything about Airdrie?
I suspect that Airdrie won't finish in the top four.
Are you telling me that their new signing, Lachlan Bird, signed from Dandenong Thunder, who play in the second tier of Australian football, isn't going to be the change maker?
Is that the guy that they announced? It's like flowing blonde locks.
I've put my notes here. He looks like he'd work in the surf shack in Home and Away.
That won't guarantee promotion.
Listen, there's loads of Australians in Scotland, all making names for themselves.
Well, yes, there is, but that doesn't guarantee Airdrie promotion.
I have my doubts about Lachlan Bird. Just a great name, great, everything about him, just the hair, the look, the name, the team that he signed for. It's a very exciting time to be a Diamond. If you remember when they were signing all those guys from Spanish football, this... Now really is the time to shine. So as well, for interesting from this match, well, Adam Frizzell was playing out wide in this, and I thought that he had really sort of become a very, very good player at Airdrie when he was brought in field. He'd sort of gone from a fairly average winger into a very good centre midfielder. He was particularly good last season when Rhys McCabe and Dylan Easton were on the side, so it was interesting to see him moved out wide. I mean, although he scored today, I'm not sure if that's a long-term move for him.
No, and again, it kind of feeds into the fact that Airdrie have... are kind of bereft of options. Like they have a starting 11, they maybe have another two or three subs, and that's about it. And their 13-man squad plus very young manager is I'd be surprised if they're in the top four come the end of the season.
I'm going to stick by what I said earlier. The transfer window is still open. There's still time for Rhys McCabe to bring in guys that he can trust, new players that he can hang his hat on. Guys like Lachlan Burdo, he was on the bench against Kelty. But I still maintain that any of those five teams are vying for that one spot. Four teams? Five teams are vying for... No. Five, two, three... Four teams are vying for that one spot. Sorry, I had to do my arithmetic there for a second. And I still think it's achievable for them.
No, it is, but I don't think they will.
Perhaps a team who have signed players is Kelty Hearts. They have brought in Tui Daramola from Bo'ness Athletic on a 3.5-year contract. He will be loaned back to Bo'ness for the remainder of the season. He is a bit of a phenomenon at Bo'ness. He's scoring, I think Bo'ness, I saw, if I'm right, he scored about 113 goals so far this season. Albeit it is
a very low level.
They're in the East of Scotland third division. So that's seven divisions between themselves and Kelty Hearts. But Daramola, he'd previously been at Stenhousemuir, and he was a player that I always quite looked liked the look of and wanted him to be given a chance, but I don't think that managers ever really quite fancied him, and he's dropped down that level, and he's obviously recast himself as a superstar striker. He looks, judging by the photo that accompanied his signing with Kelty Hearts, he looks bigger. He looks like he's been at the gym, and he's apparently very, very fast, very, very strong, and that goes a long way at that level. And I'll be really interested to see how he gets on. I think that he's raw, but there is something tangible to work there, and if Kelty Hearts can unlock that potential, they might have a very good striker indeed. But albeit it comes with the caveat that he was playing at a low level previously, so it might take a bit of time to adjust.
I think the fact that Kelty have immediately loaned him out would suggest that they don't trust him fully as it stands.
That might have been part of the deal with Bonas. Bonas said, yeah, you can have him, but we want to keep him.
Perhaps. I'm interested to see him. I know Joe's seen him, and he said that he is lightning quick, and his finishing is very good, so I'll be interested to see him.
The statement that accompanied his signing on the Kelty Hearts website, I'm going to read this out to you. Kelty Hearts Football Club are committed to identifying talent and providing them with an environment which we feel can enhance careers. Young or old, we want to harness people's ambitions. If individuals improve and achieve, then collectively we will all achieve our goals. What football team does that sound like? It sounds like what Motherwell would have in their Twitter bio if they had enough space. That's who it sounds like. Sounds like Motherwell FC.
Yeah, but I think Motherwell, the worst of their worst have gone.
Alan Burrows.
No, I was meaning other people.
Okay, I don't know what you mean, Sean.
Me neither.
Definitely. Scottish football's gain is West Ham's loss. Now, Sean, this is your chance. This is your chance to get involved. Tell us about the Edinburgh match.
They were
beaten 2-1 by Alloa.
Yes, and I suspect that Alloa are going to drop out the top four,
based on a win against a team that were lying above them in the table.
They did not lose to Alloa.
No, you said Alloa are going to drop at the top four.
Oh no, I think Edinburgh are going to drop at the top four.
Right, wow.
Do you not think
through,
so?
Talk us through your working, Sean. You watched the highlights. I didn't.
So I think that Edinburgh's squad has been stretched thin. I think that they've done well so far, and as much as Hibs recalling their three loan players has an effect on this Edinburgh team. I'm not entirely sure that affects their starting 11, but it affects their squad. Certainly affects how many players they could bring on. It affects how many kind of half decent players they could bring on as a substitute. And I just think that Edinburgh, unless they can bring in two or three players between now and the end of January, won't be finishing in the top four.
So is it just because the players went by? I mean, talk us through was there any passage of play? Was there any of the Alloa's goals that have helped firm up that impression that you've got of them?
In terms of Edinburgh?
Yeah.
They looked second best. And In terms of Edinburgh this season, they've always kind of outperformed expectations, but they now look like they have a starting 11 and no subs. Like, they had virtually no subs at the weekend against Alloa. Mm-hmm. And I think they have a decent starting 11, but that's about it.
I suppose that I think it was only a matter of time before Falkirk really started getting their act together. And you see now that Falkirk, with their 4-0 win over Clyde at the weekend, they've overtaken them in the table. And now it's a two-horse, I think it's going to be a two-horse race for that title, albeit when one of the horses is much further ahead than the other ones. And I don't know. I suppose they were put out before. At the start of the season, I would have had Edinburgh down as certainly not as bad as Clyde or Peterhead. So I suppose like an eighth place finish would have been all right. But I mean, it's just two defeats, and it's two narrow defeats as well. In fact, though, I'm just checking Edinburgh's fixture list. They've got Falkirk at home next, and then Queen of the South away next. Two teams who have thumped them over the course of this season already. So though the next fortnight or so might have a big bearing in terms of what happens with their season, but I'm fairly confident they'll finish in the. I think they've got the potential to bring in more players. Although there is a bit.
Did you not say on the last television shows that they would not finish in the top four?
I can't, Sean. I'm a shock jock. I just say things for attention. Me and Jim Spence, we're two sides of the same coin. I'm the Batman to his Joker. He's the Joker to my Batman. You just say things. I don't know. I think they'll finish it, but then Sean, that show finished in November. You can change your mind about things.
No, you absolutely can.
I'm Brantano. I say this all the time. I flip and I flop. And that's part of the fun. You can't pin me down. I'm too protein for you. Okay. Well, just before we move on, I wanted to touch on Montrose 1, Queen of the South 0. This was Marvin Bartley's first match as a Queen of the South manager, and it ended in defeat. It was a very, very well-taken goal by Blair Lyons. That won this match, twisted and turned Kieran McKenna inside out before finishing beyond Kevin Dabrowski. What do you think? You get the chance to see this one, Sean?
Aye, and as much as Queen of South were kind of second best, I still think it's a good appointment.
Yeah, I mean, it's only one game, and I think that they had chances to win. Ross Sinclair, the Montrose goal, played very well. And I think it's like Kieran McKenna, a player who hasn't, I think it's fair to say, hasn't had much of an impact so far this season at Palmerston. He was really turned inside out like a bloody pretzel, like Dalsim from Street Fighter, to bring in a second Street Fighter analogy this week. So I wouldn't read too much into it.
No, I do think it's as we spoke about last week, it's a good appointment. Well, potentially. A good appointment, and that everything that we know about Marvin Bartley is kind of suggests positive vibes.
Yeah. On top of that, Josh Todd missed a penalty. He put it right over the bar as well. So it could have been a different. We could have seen that's a good point against a side that hadn't won in their last eight matches. But nevertheless, I think the only way is up for Queen of the South, quite literally.
Or town.
Like we said last week, it would really, really take some doing for Queen of the South to finish in ninth place. It would really take some doing.
Well, imagine if Marvin Bartley achieves that.
Nah, he won't make a horrendous if he did, though. Absolutely horrendous. We'd put egg in our faces after we backed him heavily. Anyway, we're going into the basement division for a match between Forfar Athletic and Dumbarton. Finished 2-1 to the Loons, who continue their resurgence under Mr. Raymond McKinnon. Ryan McGeever, the Dumbarton defender, was set off after 12 minutes, which really turned the match in Forfar's favour. Ben Armour's double did the business, and although Ali Love pulled one back from the penalty spot with 14 minutes left, it wasn't enough. Now, Forfar have taken 14 points for a possible 21 since McKinnon came in, a great return given how poor they were under Gary Evan. They're now up to fifth place, a point outside the playoffs, and it was Dumbarton's first loss in over 3 months. They're still top of the table, they've still got a 4-point advantage over Stirling Albion, but they have played a game more. Sean McGuigan, tell me about this one.
I am starting to suspect that Forfar might finish in top four.
I think
the appointment of Ray McKinnon is a very, very good one. I know he's had his critics, and I think it's an excellent appointment. I really do.
No, I don't disagree. I think that he's. I think he stays in Dundee. I know he had a wee heart scare for that, and I'm absolutely delighted that he's overcome that and he's back to full fitness. And I think that in the circumstances, in terms of appointing a manager, I really don't think Forfar could have got any better in the circumstances. A guy who has I think it's fair to say mixed fortunes as a full-time manager. Did a qualified success at Queen's Park, you know, given all the advantages he had, you could really only win the division. I suppose his time at Falkirk was, I got them relegated, not very good. The time at Greenock Morton, barely in the door.
Wraith Rovers,
Dundee United. You know, he's quite good at the Rovers.
I mean, that was the best Rovers team in about 20 years.
Right, well, there you go. It doesn't really get much better than that. If he actually won something tangible, but nevertheless, that's pretty good here. I think he's good, and I think that like it's really the same players. I mean, he always brought in some guys on loan, but I mean they're all young guys that he's brought on loan. Like Boy Hutchison's coming, Finn Robson's coming, Max Gillies joined them earlier today on loan from Queen's Park, but it's really the same players, and I think it paints. I suppose when you see a new manager coming in and doing very well with the same group of players, it really doesn't paint Gary Irvin and Gary Harkins, the previous incumbents, in the greatest of lights.
No, it doesn't. And now we're in a situation where, so we thought that Forfa would be there or thereabouts when it comes to getting promoted this season. That's still not an impossible task.
It's not, though, because we said it last week, there are only two sides in that division that are showing any kind of consistency, and they're Dumbarton and Stirling Albion. Now, however, a third challenger has entered the contest, and Forfa are showing their own levels of consistency. And I think what you're going to see is the division's going to sort of like fracture into parts, and I don't want to repeat what we said last week, but the point you made was very, very good about some teams are beginning to get their act together and some teams aren't. And I think the teams that are beginning to get their act together, Forfar's one of them. Like Albion Rovers, I don't know if Albion Rovers ever had an act to get together in the first place, but you know what I mean? Albion Rovers have won 4-0 in their, I've scored 8 times in their last two matches. They're in a bit of a turn. Stennis Muir have got a new manager in place. Annan are still like frustratingly inconsistent. I think that you will see like that those last two places up for grabs, and I think any of those teams can challenge for them. When I finished speaking there, Sean, I kind of expected you to join in, even just to say yes, just so it's not just me talking.
Yes.
See what I really liked about this match? See, knowing that Ryan McGeever was sent off after 12 minutes, watching the highlights, McGeever's sending off comes about halfway through those highlights. The first 12 minutes, there was tons of stuff that happened in it.
Did he deserve to get sent off?
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Yeah. And I know his hand came across, but was it totally deserved?
I think, right, I thought that Ben Armour was looking for a penalty with that, because he certainly
threw himself down.
He continues his run. He can see he's a bit off balance, but in a way where he's still got an element of control. He continues it all the way to the penalty box, and I think it's that intention that I'll win a penalty for the team. It didn't quite happen because he'd gone down just outside the box, but I do think that McGeever had his hands all over him, and it was a penalty. I don't think there was much dissension from from anyone at Dumbarton. I do think it was the correct decision.
Ben Arbon has hardly any career goals. Almost all of them coming against Dumbarton.
Yeah, it's remarkable looking, but I saw somebody mention that in Pine Bovril. I think he's got about 11 career goals, 5 of them or so, yep, come against the Barton. He scored a lot, particularly when he was previously at Peterhead. But no, took his two goals well here. But just before we go on and talk about Ben Armour, like I suppose you've got to talk about Ryan McGeever. Like, he is he's got 18 months left in his contract at Dumbarton, and he's a very useful player. You know, he's a club captain, he's a big guy, he's a good stopper, but he just doesn't look fit. I know he had quite a bad injury and came back from it, but the last time he played 90 minutes was in the 3-2 defeat to Stranraer back in the 20th of September. And that was a match that they, you know, when they did won all the first like 7 games, that was the first match that they lost. He's played four times since McGeever, accumulating 29 minutes of game time, and he just looks a bit slow and lumbering. I think that with Gregor Buchanan not playing in that match, I think he was suspended for this one, it just showed up the reserves. There's a big drop-off, and McGeever's a good player, but he needs to be fit, and he needs to get games to get fit. So I don't know if loaning him out might be a viable option for Dumbarton.
Would loaning him out be...
Because bear in mind, Sean, he's got another year left in his contract.
So are you suggesting he should be loaned out because he's not quite good enough, or because he is struggling, or is just coming back from an injury?
I think he's struggling at the moment, and Dumbarton could have an asset on their hands, but they're in a position where they've got a league title to win, and I don't think you can really afford any passing of this. So why not see if you could send him to Clyde, for instance, for the remainder of the season?
It seems sensible, but whether that happens or not, I don't know.
Just an idea. Just an idea. Just throwing that out there. But prior to that, there was a lot of action. You had a moment there where there was a mix-up in defence between Andy Munro and Roberto Ndidi. And Greg Wild nipped in, and Ryan Wallace that couldn't quite finish. There was Stephen McCluskey hitting the crossbar from 8 yards. There was Mark McCallum miscontrolling a back pass and almost going into his own net. It looked a lot of fun.
No, you're right, I found it good fun.
And there was, of course, we've mentioned Ben Armour. The goal there came, it was a Mark Docherty ball down the left flank. Really poor from Stuart Carswell, coming out to try and meet it, completely whiffing it. And then Armour is just a straightforward finish under the legs of Brett Long in the goal. And it was the same movement with Mark Docherty at left back, punting these balls into the channels. And this one for Forfar's penalty, Sean, was there any debate there about whether Aaron Linus's challenge was outside the box in Sebros?
I thought it was on the line.
If it's on the line, does that mean it's a penalty, or does that mean it happens on the line?
It's a penalty.
Right. That's my curiosity satisfied. So I correct soon. It was a really bad challenge. Like, it was really, really clumsy.
There was no need for it whatsoever.
No, he's just not going anywhere. And then, of course, Dumbarton get their own penalty. And this was Ali Love, that he was fouled inside the box. I think he was held at a corner. And
I couldn't find any good footage of either the award, the penalty, or Ali Love's reaction, which is quite frustrating. So when I'd initially seen that there was highlights up, I just clicked on it and didn't really think anything of it. But for the first, like, maybe, I don't know, 60 seconds or so, it was just somebody's living room. I was like, well, what am I looking at here? But it turns out it was just somebody's amateur highlights of Forfar at the weekend. So I had to abandon that and then look at the professional highlights. But I still couldn't establish whether or not it was a penalty.
Well, Sean, luckily for you, I was in contact with an associate of ours who follows Dumbarton. Don't want to say too much more. You might know who I'm referring to. Don't want to say too much more. But this person sent me video footage that was taken from behind the goals of the penalty. And what had happened was, it's Mark Docherty, he and Ali Love used to play with each other. And Docherty was trying to put him off by saying, like, you're going to miss. And when you saw in the highlights where Love is running back the ball in his arms, you see him briefly pointing at someone. That's Mark Docherty's pointing at. And you can see that continued up to that, like, he was actually quite in Docherty's face. The referee got between them, and there was stuff for Zeno Pine Ball about
Love. I'd like to see more of that.
Love was squaring up to Docherty. Sorry, Love was squaring up to the referee. That wasn't the case. He was close to the referee, but pointed at Docherty as he was going there. Just an angry young man.
He really is. He really is.
There's breaking news this evening, Sean. This was announced earlier today that the Dumbarton manager Stevie Farrell, Frank McEwen, his assistant, and the goalkeeping coach Eric Phillips have extended their contracts with the club up till 2025, and they're already talking to players to agree new terms for next season.
I am amazed by that.
I'm surprised as well why the length of the contract. I can understand that maybe wanting to give him a new deal, reward of how how well the season's been going so far, but there's still a lot of work to be done. I just think that you don't know what division you're going to be in. What's the harm in waiting till the end of the season to talk about new contracts?
And 4 or 5 months ago, Stevie Farrell was regarded as a fairly terrible Dumbarton manager.
I always think that he's only just a handful of games away from supporters turning on him because of last season. Again, referring to Pye and Bovril, where one fan was like, he needs to get us promoted to make up for the relegation last season. So they'll just sort of cancel each other out. And I feel like we've spoken. I still think Dumbarton are going to win the league, but that's they didn't play very well at the weekend there. Granted, they were down to 10 men for 78 minutes of the match. But and then on top of that, they've got the problems with the pitch. They've got a couple of games, Stirling Albion, Stenhouse Muir. They've still got to play games that were postponed because of the nick of the pitch. And yeah, it just feels like there was no need to start talking about contracts at this stage, I don't think.
It was surprising. I don't think that any Dumbarton fan is enamoured at the news, which is always, it's always a barometer.
Yeah, that's certainly the impression that I got from reading Pye and Bovril, that most of the people are just sort of like what are we doing? What's the rush? But you know, proof's in the pudding. Then I suppose there's ways to think of it. I don't think for a second that Stevie Farrell would see a new contract as being like job done, take the foot off the accelerator or anything like that, because there's a league title is in your hands. It's all within your grasp. Why would you suddenly stop working as hard for that? Because you know you've got the security of another 2.5 years left in your contract. I certainly don't think that would be the case.
No, but you're essentially rewarding for somebody who has had a successful 5 months and that's it.
Won 3 manager of the month trophies in that time, Sean. They don't grow in trees.
Right, but that's probably based on Craig Fowler's team of the weeks.
We'll come on and talk about Craig Fowler just shortly. But the next games, a very interesting game coming up, Stirling Albion versus Forfar Athletic at this weekend. Whether or not this game goes ahead, we're not 100% sure, because it's going to be very, very cold in Stirlingshire this week, so the pitch might be frozen. But say it does go ahead, that's a pretty tasty encounter on the cards.
I think Stirling Albion will win. They're now my tip for League Two.
Okay, fair enough. In Dumbarton's next match, they play Kilmarnock away in the Scottish Cup. By the end of the month, they're playing Bonnyrigg Rose Athletic.
Dumbarton will win and Bonnyrigg will get relegated.
What do you think, though? Sticking with Bonnyrigg, they made, I think this might be their first signing of the window, where they signed Xander Murray from Galifereydean. He's got 7 goals in 15 games for the Lowland League side. Apparently, Robbie Horn had been keen on him, signing him for some time. And Xander Murray is perhaps better known as the first openly gay footballer in Scotland. Do you think he can get the goals that Bonnyrigg badly need?
Other than the obvious that everybody knows about him, I don't know a lot about him, however. Apparently he's far too good for the Lowland League, so it feels like a good signing.
I don't know, man. It's like, see if it'd been like Stirling Albion signing him, where you say a player's far too good for the Lowland League and you're going up into a standard of good players where you're making that step up, then I think that might have been a good signing. But I think it's, you've got a team there who are like all Lowland League players, and it's just, you're just adding to the pool. I'm not sure if he's going to like give them the quality that they really need. We said last week it's sort of like experience that they need, good like a bit of pace. I think he's got that, but I think he will find it as a challenge coming up into the SPFL, where it is a step up from the teams you'll be used to playing against.
Duncan Mackay rates him.
Well, you know something, that's good enough for me. If big Duncan Mackay rates him, then good on him. I hope he has a big success there, because he seems like quite a cool guy and seems like quite a charismatic guy. And just to finish up, Sean, you encouraged me to watch the highlights between Stranraer and Albion Rovers. Not
yes.
To watch a scintillating attacking showcase from the Vers, but to listen to the Stranraer TV commentary team.
Yeah, there seemed to be some kind of mental breakdown between everybody involved in the Stranraer commentary team. Now, I've observed this over the piece of the season. But certainly recently, it's escalated. It's become worse. That they're not dealing with the Stranraer commentary team are not dealing well with how poorly they are doing.
That certainly was the case. I mean, Albion Rose were excellent in this match, scored some very good goals, but it sounded like a malfunctioning chuckle brother at points. So it was just like, oh dear,
oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear.
I want to say though, man, it's like the highlights package is excellent though from Stranraer. Just like the graphics at the start with the lineups, the filming's very good. Obviously from that grandstand at Stair Park, you get a really good vantage point of the pitch, and it's just a really good package with replays and so on. And I do think the commentary is a sort of wee bit like, I can imagine it's sort of like the equivalent of sitting next to two old boys in a pub. That's what the commentary is. But that's there's nothing wrong with that.
However, is there a bit of you that thinks I'd be okay with Stranraer getting relegated because of their commentators?
I think that Stranraer are in big trouble, though. I mean, that's beaten by Bonnyrigg, beaten by Stenhouse Muir, and then absolutely thrashed by Albion Rovers as well. Though I think that Charlie Riley, however, the Albion Rovers superstar winger, he's been linked with Dundee.
That does affect Albion Rovers prospects, very much so.
Which would be a massive blow. You would think that the Rovers would want to try and keep a hold of Riley to the end of the season. However, if there's money involved, that might allow Brian Reid to sign an adequate replacement. Watch this space. But anyway, you know what, Sean? I think that's a perfect time to wrap up this evening's show. I've had fun. What about yourself?
I've had fun as well.
Excellent, that's the main thing. Now, I know that Fowler said I ripped him off when I say enjoy your football at the show. Apparently that's what he says, and he says I'm ripping him off when I say it as gimmick infringement, and that's something that we don't want people doing that. We said that right at the start. I don't want people infringing gimmicks, so I'm not going to say enjoy your football. I didn't realise that Fowler had copyrighted those three everyday words, so I'm going to finish the show with have a great time at the football, but do so with respect. That's how I'm going to start finishing every show.
And I'm sure a lot of people will ultimately respect that.
So, Sean, wonderful to spend the evening with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you to the listener as well. Great to hang out with you. Please, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to our Patreon. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of podcasts in there. There is more entertainment for years than the entire back catalogue in Spotify, and I don't say that lightly. So please put your hand in your pocket and pay for it. Simple as that. But take care and have a great time at the football, but do so with respect. Thank you.
Podcast Network.